The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
This is Mike Consul, and welcome to the first Infrastructure Report of 2020. I am joined by Chase McWhirter, who is Managing Director of Institutional Investing in Infrastructure. He's going to take a look back at 2019. He'll also take a look ahead to 2020. Thank you for joining us, and without any further ado, here is my conversation with Chase McWhirter.
Chase, I was reminded, since we're going to be talking about 2019 and taking a look ahead to 2020, I was reminded of a recent Dorman Report podcast where I was talking to our CEO, Jeff Dorman, and he, fresh off the board of directors meeting for I3, I asked him, you know, what really stood out to him. And he said, this is the sophistication of infrastructure investors. They've been at it for a while. They're more sophisticated than I've ever seen them. What did you see in 2019? Kind of summarize the year for us. We're very active with the infrastructure community. What's your assessment of 2019?
I would definitely echo Jeff's comments on the sophistication. I feel like we even talked about that at the beginning of 2019, reflecting on 2018, that it's kind of a trend of, I think you're just seeing more sophistication, not only from kind of the products that are coming out as far as seeing more specialists, but even from the investors and just kind of the questions they're asking and how they're structuring their portfolios. I think one of the things that really stuck out, not only at the editorial advisory board meeting, but again, just throughout the year, is at our point of view, kind of, and I look at it as being on the publication side, we can kind of look at things from a really high level. I think what you see is a lot of good things happening. I think there's obviously a ton of money flowing into infrastructure. You're seeing things like ESG reporting. I mean, lots of firms are reporting into those different standards, trying to create more sustainable portfolios. But I think one of the things that comes with the sophistication is, I guess, just a higher level of scrutiny. And I think that is something that 2019, especially in talking to the investors, getting some candid kind of feedback, I think that they do see not necessarily issues right now, but I think things that could become issues that they're trying to get out in front of. And even I think things that we, I3, IREI, that things that we can maybe try to help solve some of these problems just by shedding a light on them before they become major issues. And that really was, it came down to kind of two things that, again, in pretty candid conversations you heard, is one of the things being deal flow. And we get mixed reviews on, are there enough deals? Because you'll hear from managers, oh, they have plenty of deals that they're reviewing. But when you talk to the investor side, and I'll use just one example, one of the investors basically saying, kind of within a month, 2 months, seeing a presentation and it's talking about a case study, this asset that they bought, it was needed a ton of work on it. So they added a ton of value and then sold it off at a increased multiple. And then within a month or two, another manager came in showing the same asset and showed, look at this essentially terrible asset that we just acquired that we're going to fix up and sell at a high multiple. And I know that's not some groundbreaking thing. I'm sure it happens pretty frequently, but it was something that kind of stuck out, at least to this investor. And you talk about it coming full circle, that record money being raised. What he was presenting was, it's not that they don't want to allocate to infrastructure, but if they keep seeing things like this, it will be something that could maybe hinder them allocating money.
Well, you know, one of the things that I'm curious about is just the level of investing dollar-wise, and maybe at a portfolio level percentage-wise. Did you see, and I don't know if you have these numbers at your fingertip, Chase, but or committed to memory, but did we see a higher dollar volume of investing in 2019 in infrastructure? And is the allocation, the percentage allocation within portfolios higher? Are institutional investors, have they made the decision that infrastructure is something they want to play in a bigger way?
I can broadly answer yes. As far as the numbers, I would have to look back. And I think we actually discussed it in the January issue of I3. So I'm sure those numbers are in the article because we have a fundraising report from 2019. But at a high level, yeah, I do know that just tracking it throughout the year that even just between obviously some of the bigger funds that were out in the market in 2019, still record amounts being raised, deal sizes still getting bigger and bigger. I think, I don't want to say it's necessarily a problem. I think it's more just something we're talking about being more sophisticated. I think what comes with being more sophisticated is, especially as the investors become more sophisticated, they're going to start asking more of these questions and taking a more critical eye and, again, full circle, potentially reducing their allocations. Because, I mean, a lot of surveys out there, I think even stuff we've done, it shows that there's a desire to increase allocations. I mean, you look at our news in I3, you constantly see increases in allocation from some of the bigger pension funds. So I think there's still a desire, and I don't foresee in 2020 it necessarily slowing down. But I think you are going to see at least just a little more critical eye on kind of those case studies that I presented, that those aren't going to, I don't think they're ever okay, but I just think you could see some investors really start shying away based on that kind of concern. Like, okay, what are we really looking at? What's the universe of prospective deals? Because I always just equate it, relating it to real estate, that, I mean, real estate has obviously a very efficient brokerage systems and things like CoStar, LoopNet. You're able to find assets that are out on the market. That doesn't necessarily exist in infrastructure. I mean, it's not like a huge transparent market yet. It's just a function of, I think, it maturing, that a lot of deals, majority of them, are off market. Which is obviously unique in comparison to real estate.
Well, and the some of the potential deals have to do with governments being willing to let go of their control over those deals to partner in some way. And sometimes they get pushed back from voters who just feel like this is a giveaway of taxpayer money, far from the truth. But people are pretty cynical these days about decisions that government makes. You mentioned deal flow earlier. Are we seeing a higher level of deal flow? Are governments coming around in terms of realizing, hey, look, we don't have the money for this, and it would make a lot of sense for us to turn to the private sector, especially since there's been so much money sitting on the sidelines for so long and wanting some access to that?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it keeps coming down to it's just different geographically. I mean, in Europe, I don't think it's as big of a problem. Actually, I can pretty much say it isn't, just because that's what we hear, that it's not as big of a deal to use private capital. Whereas, yeah, here, especially in the U.S., and it is funny, you hear from Canadians, Europeans, Americans, it seems like we're somewhat schizophrenic, that we have such distrust of government, but we don't want any private money coming into our infrastructure. We want it to be run by the government that we apparently distrust.
Yeah, it is odd. Also because we are a country that's always been very big on privatization And yet with infrastructure, we've been very resistant when it comes to privatization, but it doesn't, it feels very much like there really isn't a choice because governments just don't have the money.
Yeah, well, and that's, and that I think is, and that somewhat even, I guess, segues into stuff that we want to work on in 2020 to see how we can be some sort of resource in, again, just trying to find out how to, because I think a big part of it is just educational. I just don't think a lot of people on the government side, and this isn't just my opinion, this is what you hear from, I mean, people we've talked to that will testify on Capitol Hill. And I mean, it really does come down to a lot of the time, it's just a lack of understanding and kind of how these deals can be structured with using private capital. I think the fear, you know, you talk to a lot of government officials that it's like, they don't want to lose a reelection because of infrastructure. It's like, that would be the worst possible thing that they could lose a reelection because of, because it's so non-political. I mean, it's the least partisan thing out there. So why hang your hat on that to potentially not get reelected? So one of the things that we wanted to do was work with, because it's usually handled at kind of the city level, and I think this could be something that could be utilized internationally if it is needed, but almost like we had this discussion at the editorial board, putting together some sort of P3 primer, something that can just kind of whether it's for the big contracting engineering firms, to relate it to the government side, to relate it to the private capital side. It's almost like trying to put together something just so you can have something to draw from that we can distribute to the government side that comes from a publication like ours. I just think it has a different view from the government side on, okay, this is how we can structure these deals. It's not, we're just selling off our water system to XYZ fund manager. So I think that's something that we wanted to work on because, I mean, to be honest, what we see is the fundraising halting, not because of changes in strategy or anything like that, but again, going back to this kind of lack of deal flow, that it's going to come full circle, that the lack of markets opening is going to indirectly affect the amount of money being raised, because a lot of that money is just going to be sitting on the sidelines. So why are these investors going to commit capital to infrastructure? So it's kind of this virtuous circle that I think we're trying to figure out how we can plug in a small way to potentially help with that problem that goes back to just trying to open up deal flow. Because I think a lot of it just comes down to an educational aspect, not necessarily anyone not wanting to open up infrastructure investment. I think it's just really educational.
What about thinking in terms of 2019, but also into 2020, are there certain aspects of infrastructure? I mean, energy jumps to mind for me because I've seen some huge energy funds that have been put together by infrastructure divisions of companies like Brookfield and so on. Is there a particular type of infrastructure that you've seen that has been particularly available or popular in terms of fundraisers? Is energy that category, or do you see, or maybe you see some other categories that are more popular, or even just what you'd put in the same class?
Yeah, no, I definitely think energy, especially in North America, energy is still very popular. And that goes renewable or kind of traditional midstream. Seeing a ton of money being raised for renewables and midstream. So I think both of those are going to continue to trend up. And I think that goes into kind of a bigger long-term macro trend over the next decade of what we keep hearing about trying to get off fossil fuels. That I think you're just seeing these investors wanting to get out in front of that as governments are pushing away from fossil fuel. I think another, I'd say after that, what I foresee is continued push into the digital infrastructure. Data centers, you're talking about rolling out of 5G, which I actually read something recently. It seems to be a little bit less impressive than kind of it's been built up to be. Maybe that's just a function of it not being rolled out correctly. But either way, I just think the digital infrastructure space is going to continue to be one similar to energy. And I think those two even tie together, obviously. Outside of that, I think I wouldn't say any stand out. I mean, obviously transportation, seen a lot of actual deals in the last few months on that and in the rail sector, both in North America and Europe. So I'd continue to see some transportation. But other than that, I'd say those are the big ones. And then, I mean, even one of the other things that I wanted to talk about with, again, going back to this industry becoming more sophisticated, because you talk about renewables and traditional energy. One of the other things that outside of deal flow, because we talked about ESG being having good trends towards it, but again, some of these cracks you see in it, having some conversations in this year, really talking about the issues with ESG reporting. These are conversations coming from ESG focused personnel that are obviously really digging into it. And basically with the reporting, they were just saying that they think some of the reporting standards don't reflect necessarily true ESG impact. And the example I was given was you're almost more rewarded with some of these reporting systems for taking a, and these are extremes obviously, but taking a coal-fired power plant and just retrofitting it maybe to natural gas or something, making it cleaner versus doing a ground up renewable energy deal. Just the way the grading system comes out, you're not as rewarded for, again, that kind of scenario where you're foundationally focused on ESG. You don't get as rewarded as someone that would take over a terrible coal plant and fix it up to be more ESG compliant. So mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting that, again, I mean, these are good and bad things, I think, that it just speaks to it's no longer, let's just raise record amounts of capital and deploy it. You're just seeing a lot more kind of digging into the weeds and not necessarily looking for problems, but making sure that you're identifying potential small issues that could become big ones that could impact the market. So I thought those two kind of anecdotes of ESG and deal flow were two things that really kind of stuck out.
So let's talk about 2020. What are you expecting for 2020? What do you hear from the members of our advisory board? What do you hear from people in the industry? Are there any landmarks or any milestones that we should be reaching? We'll kind of summarize for us what you're expecting to see, Chase, you know, based on the input of the many industry people you come in contact with.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think you're going to see, and I think this goes to different surveys. I mean, I think you're going to continue to see increased or steady allocations to infrastructure as an asset class. I think as far as types of funds, I do think that you're going to see, and this maybe is a 2 or 3 year trend, but I think you're going to see continually more kind of specialist fund managers come out and try to take advantage of being counter to kind of the big global macro funds. So I do think you're going to see a push towards specialization, which I personally think is good. Because obviously you see it on the real estate side as that's matured. And then I do think even just as far as kind of macro concerns, obviously you still have Brexit being worked out. You got the China trade deals being worked out. Obviously now you've got, is the Strait of Hormuz going to be shut down? I mean, who knows, all those kind of macro issues. But I think that just goes to, infrastructure being a defensive asset class. So I think from a macro perspective, it's an asset class that fits into that category of a way to be kind of defensive in a, unstable market. So I think that's something good to keep an eye on. Other than that, I mean, as far as further looking into 2020, I already touched on it, just what we're looking to do. I think we don't just want to look at these things and report on them like, hey, look at this lack of deal flow. If that really is an issue, I mean, a lot of managers don't really have that problem, but for the investors, I mean, that is where we want to kind of be proactive in doing certain things to, again, make our small contribution to create some change there to help open up deal flow, to shed light on some of these ESG reporting issues. One thing we're actually doing next month in New York is working with the benchmarking group EDHEC. We go by EDIC, but they've got what we think is a pretty sophisticated benchmark, and that's another issue in infrastructure, is the lack of a good private benchmark. So trying to collaborate with groups like that. So I think it's kind of seeing these different, small issues and just seeing where we can be a resource to push things forward. So those are kind of some things that we're trying to work on.